Further Review is brought to you by Consumers Beverages, Buffalo's beer store. Visit us online at consumersbeverages.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Further Review here on BuffaloNews.com. I'm Ryan O'Halloran, joined, as always, by Jay Skirsky to review what's becoming commonplace, another Bills win. On a Monday morning, they are 10-2 after a 35-10 win over San Francisco that clinched a fifth consecutive AFC East title. First time that's been done in franchise history. And Jay, there's a lot to unpack. Thankfully for us here on the North Towns, we didn't have to shovel our way out of the game, but we got there, and it was a safe commute home. And, you know, where do we start? Let's start with, I mean, you've been here for all five of these division titles. Is this the most surprising one, unlikely one?
It's the most surprising in its dominance, right? Because you've got 5 weeks left in the regular season. As you wrote, Ryan, this is by far the earliest that they've clinched the division. The longevity of the streak is also surprising, only in the sense that this is something that Jim Kelly and that group didn't accomplish. And you mentioned that in your column today. You know, the fact that they have done something that has never been done in franchise history is remarkable. It's cause to be celebrated. And that's what we watched last night, was a three and a half hour celebration inside Highmark Stadium. And, you know, listen, we can have the conversation about the dome, and we can have the conversation about the weather and the impact that it has. But on nights like that, when the home team is rolling, when their MVP caliber quarterback is playing the way he is, when the defense has taken the football away, it results in a pretty fun 3 hours. And I think all of the fans inside Highmark Stadium, the ones who weren't frozen to their seats, had a lot of fun at that game, because it was there was a lot to celebrate. There was a lot to like about it. And, you know, in terms of where this team ranks, we kicked that around during the bye week in our roundtable discussion. With each passing game and with each passing win, I'm finding it harder and harder to say that this isn't the best of the Alan McDermott era.
Yeah, and what you're hearing nationally, and including this morning, is, well, everybody thought this was supposed to be a rebuild season. No, we still thought this was going to be a playoff team. Probably just thought there'd be more bumps in the road. Probably thought there'd be more games like Houston where things just didn't work and they lost, and that happens in the NFL. But you start with Allen. You know, he should be atop the MVP voting right now. Saquon Barkley is making a charge, and, you know, Josh made history last night. He threw for one, he ran for one, he caught for one. And I will not going to frame this, but Jay Allen's 7-yard pass play by Jay Allen. That's a touchdown. And if anybody could have been in the press box as Jay tried to explain to some of our colleagues, that's what the book says. That's what this play says. You would have gotten a kick out of it, because I know I did. But this team right now it's a well-oiled machine, because they can beat you in so many ways. And, you know, you look back at last night, and, okay, did Josh Allen really do anything spectacular? Not really, but that was enough, because he leaned on James Cook. Ty Johnson made some plays. Ray Davis, Shakir did his thing. Dawson Knox got downfield. So, you know, the fact that they are so diverse on offense, and then so takeaway, you know, not reliable, but they can take away the ball on defense, just sort of sets games up like this. And, you know, let's face it, when San Francisco lost Christian McCaffrey, that ended 49ers hopes, because McCaffrey was doing whatever he wanted in that first quarter, so it would have been a close game. But, you know, I'll finish my point on the five division titles. This league is built to not have that happen. Mm-hmm. With the cap, with the draft, with parity being the goal. But you look at the Chiefs with Mahomes, you look at the Bills with Allen. If you have that guy at quarterback and he stays healthy and he keeps improving, that's how you win multiple division championships in a row.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, if you read Mark Gaughan's three questions, number six might be looking pretty good too, because the rest of the AFC East is just such a disaster right now that it's hard to see paths forward for a lot of those teams. But we've got a whole lot of time before we just start discussing anything off-season related or next season related. I think we got to focus on, you know, what we're seeing right now. And Ryan, you know, you mentioned there that the defense is taking the football away. I think that's the area for me that has stepped up more so than what, you know, maybe could have reasonably been, and you know, anticipated because of the amount of turnover that they had there. You know, you lose Micah Hyde, you lose Jordan Poyer. Matt Milano makes his return. We'll talk about that a little bit more, but he had missed most of the season. But week in and week out, they're making consistent sort of game-changing plays. And, you know, my line of questioning in the locker room after the game, and it's sort of what I led my observations with, were, do you feel like this team is as well-equipped as it maybe ever has been to win a game of that nature? Because let's face it, those conditions can present themselves again, whether it be the last couple regular season games or especially in the postseason. And if they do, the Bills can't be overly reliant on Josh Allen because it is harder to throw the football in the snow. That's true. Allen can do it about as well as anybody in the league, but it's harder. And so you want to be able to have what I refer to as a reliable second pitch. And with the running game right now, they've got that. I mean, James Cook was going. Ray Davis was going, even Ty Johnson. They can run the football in a variety of different ways, and they've got, I think, maybe the best offensive line they've ever had for Josh Allen. At least they're playing at probably the highest level. And so you factor in all of those things, and, yeah, Allen goes 13-17. He's ultra-efficient. That's a really good recipe because they said, and Sean McDermott said after the game, that we knew that this was going to be a game that was won or lost at the line of scrimmage. That is not a new comment from the head coach. We hear that quite often. Well, they dominated at the line of scrimmage in this game. The 49ers did not look like they wanted to be there after Christian McCaffrey went out, and that's a really good sign moving forward in case of, you know, conditions like that coming up again.
Get your cold beer here at Consumers Beverages, where you'll find the largest selection of craft, specialty, import, and domestic beer. Consumers Beverages has the fastest empty container returns at all 18 locations. Visit ConsumersBeverages.com, Buffalo's Beer Store.
And Ryan, I briefly mentioned there at the start, the return of Matt Milano was a big part of this game for the Bills. Not so much that he returned, right? We knew once he was activated off injured reserve that that was going to be the case. But for me, the thing that stood out was the way that he was used. You know, before the score was the score in the second half and especially the fourth quarter of this game, Matt Milano was pretty close to an every down player, only coming off the field in dime situations. Five tackles, not an overwhelming statistical performance, but considering the way that they used him, how would you assess his return to the lineup?
I think a success and a surprise. You looked at the McDermott, you know, modus operandi with returning players in the last couple of years. You know, Trey White was weaned into the lineup. You know, Von Miller, same thing. You know, but different being an edge rusher. And, you know, okay, they announced Matt Milano. Okay, well, maybe he'll get a ceremonial start and he'll split time with Dorian Williams. Turned out to be the opposite. He played 37 snaps. He came out off the field in dime situations, and then you know then they pulled him back when the game got out of hand. But I thought it was a positive first step, and you know I watched him. I tried to watch him closely during those first couple of series. And one thing I did notice is he was really looking at Terrell Bernard a lot. Because let's face it, this was Matt Milano's first game with Bobby Babbage as the defensive coordinator. So I think part of that mental gymnastics is a good reason It was a positive. Get him out there. Get him in those situations. Have him adjust on the fly. Have him communicate with Bernard. And you know, I think as the games go along, you'll see him more as a you know rushing the passer in those situations, man coverage. So it's I think for the Bills, they took a good player off the field in Dorian Williams, and they felt like they put a very good player back in the lineup in Matt Milano, who hadn't played since last October. So I think he'll take steps forward with every game and get him ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, Ryan, and you've been, you know, on the timeline of Milano's injury, you know, from when it occurred in August to where it is now. I think he's beaten the timeline in terms of when we thought we would see him on the field by a little bit, not by a lot, but the fact that he's able to get back as quickly as he has gives him a long runway now to sort of get into game shape for the postseason. And ultimately that's the goal here right now with 5 weeks remaining. You can kind of ramp him up, and we know if he gets, you know, and I know it's a lot to ask, but if he gets even close to the all-pro form that he's shown in the past, with the way that this team has taken the ball away, you have to expect that he's going to at least be able to contribute to that in a positive way. you know, you do feel a little bit for Dorian Williams. It's a tough situation, and I don't think he did anything wrong necessarily to come out of the lineup. It's just, as you said, you're returning a great player who you hope can once again kind of get back to that level. And they've got the freedom, they've got the flexibility now with a division title already wrapped up to give Milano as much or as little playing time as they need or as they see fit, I guess, heading into the playoffs. That's a nice luxury to have.
Yeah, and let's face it. You when you finish the season, Patriots, Jets, Patriots, I would make Dorian Williams a part of the rotation because he's earned the right to play. And also, do you really need 70 snaps in Matt Milano to beat those teams?
Yeah,
hey, that's just the way they are right now.
Yeah, and I think, and this is something we'll touch on a lot more here over the last month and a half of the season, but you want to balance keeping these guys fresh with keeping them sharp, right? And because they do have such a long time here before the playoffs even arrive, that'll be interesting for the coaching staff. It's, a good problem to have. You love to have the division wrapped up at this point, but you know, playing time and Milano's a great example of that, but it goes beyond just him. How do they utilize their best players down the stretch to keep them active, motivated, in game shape, whatever you want to call it, ahead of the playoffs?
Yeah, and two last points. One on Milano and the timeline, the runway for him to get here. And I remember a couple weeks ago I talked to a surgeon. Okay, what's the practice schedule going to be like? And one thing he said, he goes, the Bills have a 100% crystal clear idea where he's at. And I said, well, why is that? He goes, because he tore it. They were able to repair it. This wasn't a guesswork where it was a strain and it was a partial tear and they had to let nature take its course. He goes, that was the only positive that he tore it, is they're able to really fix it and they knew exactly what was wrong. And he says that will help them on his road to recovery, if not speed it up. And that turned out to be the case. And then finally, Jay, on play time for guys, you know, if that number one seed, you got to figure that number one seed will be all the way to week 18. But I agree with your point is, do we need to see a ton of Amari Cooper? Do we need to see a ton of James Cook? I think you can work in your quality depth guys, and on defense it's the same thing, and say, hey, you know, you have a 17-game season, but you have to plan on a 20-game season. So I think that will impact, you know, how they manage their roster. Well, Jay, let's go on the offensive side. This team controlled the clock. They gained 372 yards of offense. They went 6-12 on third down without Dalton Kincaid at tight end, without Keon Coleman at receiver. Start off with this one. How are they doing it without two of the guys they were going to count on throughout this season?
Yeah, well, Thanksgiving weekend, right? So I guess it's only fitting that the everybody eats mantra sort of reemerged, right? Eight different pass catchers in the game, on a night where Allen only throws it 17 times, right? So he's spreading the ball around. You know, I maintain that their best offense personnel grouping is going to be Keon Coleman, Amari Cooper, Khalil Shakir at wide receiver, Dalton Kincaid at tight end, James Cook at running back. We haven't seen very much of that, honestly, right? But I think that's what they're working toward. You know, a couple of times on this podcast, we've sort of stressed now with 5 weeks left that they've got some flexibility. They don't have to be in a rush to return Coleman to the lineup. They don't have to be in a rush to return Kincaid to the lineup. They can get these guys right physically. Now, Coleman has missed 3 games. You would expect that he'd probably be back for this Rams game, or else, you know, probably injured reserve would have been the move for him. Kincaid didn't practice at all coming out of the bye, so maybe he's not close yet, but honestly, they don't have to be in a rush, and you wrote about it. I think, it's 9 times in 12 games this offense has put up 30 points. Imagine doing that without two of your top weapons coming into the season. I mean, the fact is there's more there for this team moving forward offensively eventually when they get those guys back.
Yeah, and I like 11 personnel. I mean, they like their extra tight end. That's the run game with Alec Anderson, but, last night's sort of a throwaway game for Cooper, for Shakir, because it was the conditions weren't conducive to running routes. So, when you get these guys back, and one thing I always worry about with a rookie like Keon Coleman is when you miss that much time, are you starting over a little bit? Mm-hmm. I think so, because Coleman and Cooper have not been on the field at all, pretty much outside of the Miami game. And so they're going to have to, they're going to have to figure out ways to use Coleman, get him back up to speed, make sure he picks back up where he left off. And really, this passing game, I still think, goes through Shakir in ideal conditions. Kincaid is an interesting one. It didn't feel like they had really tried, had really figured out how to use him yet this season. And you look at some of the routes that Dawson Knox has caught explosive passes on these last two games, those should be Dalton Kincaid routes when he gets back. It's no knock against Dawson. He can still run those plays. But, you know, maybe Joe Brady is discovering a way to get the tight end down the field, and that can help Kincaid with some big plays because he hadn't made a lot of those, 25, 30-yard catches when he was healthy. But, I agree. I mean, the fact that Kincaid hasn't practiced yet, probably another week away, that would give him more than a full month of recovery. Let's go to one of the guys at James Cook. He broke the game open. I want to say broke the game open, but he put the Bills in control with that 65-yard run. You mentioned earlier in the podcast the quality of this offensive line. This feels like it's an all-weather run game.
Yeah, and listen, that's what, we sort of talked about it a little bit in an earlier segment, but to me, that is key, right? You've got to, it feels like they've been working toward that, right? That they've wanted to be that type of offense. Well, now it feels like it's arrived. It feels like they are that type of offense, that if they have to rely on the run game, they can, right? And I'm not saying that you want to. I'm not saying that you have to, because obviously you still have the MVP, in my mind, in Josh Allen throwing the passes, but I'm with you, Ryan. That Cook run, to me, felt like the game changed entirely. I mean, it was, obviously McCaffrey getting hurt changed things for the 49ers, but I just felt like the air went out of the 49ers sideline after that touchdown run. And I honestly felt like there was some quit on that side. They were, it's snowing. They're all the way across the country, and they know their season's kind of going up in flames. And I think James Cook might have put the dagger in the 49ers season with that 65-yard touchdown run. So, it's been a bit of a reduction in terms of statistical output for Cook from where he was last year. But I don't attribute that to anything that he's doing wrong. I think that's more having reliable options behind him. I mean, Ray Davis looks like he's perfectly built to play in a game like they did last night with his north-south style. Ty Johnson seems like every time he comes into the game and touches the ball, he's doing something positive. So they are able to run the ball in a variety of different ways. It definitely starts with Cook, but it doesn't finish there.
And I'll make one point on the offense. I thought Joe Brady did a nice job adjusting after the first couple of series, because a couple of players said in the locker room after the game, they didn't expect it to snow until the second half. Well, it sure as hell started in the first half. And, and one thing, what you didn't see a lot of those slip screens. You didn't see a lot of outside runs. I mean, this was a north-south game because of the footing. And once the Bills, and that Cook touchdown made it 14-3, and that's what I thought would be their route to winning, is go up early, make the 49ers throw, and make the 49ers say, I want to get back on the damn plane. I want to go home. And that's what happened.
And Ryan, as we do each week, we should look forward to the next opponent. Obviously, that being the Los Angeles Rams. Long trip for the Bills. I think it's also, it's worthwhile to look, ahead, not just to the Rams, but to the rest of the season. 5 weeks, 10-2, as you mentioned. Still a game behind the Kansas City Chiefs, but I think the one seed is in play here, right? But, they've got to handle their business, and that starts with a long trip to SoFi Stadium, a place that they've played quite frequently. The Rams, I think, are an interesting opponent for this team. They're a fine team, a mediocre team. Their record reflects that at 6-6. It's never easy to go this far across the country, as the 49ers just showed. What do you make of this game first, Ryan, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about the AFC standings as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, the Rams are up and down. And mediocre is a good word to use. They're 6-6. You see them win one, lose one, win one, lose one. But they got some players on offense, and I'll point at Kyren Williams, 15 rushes for 104 yards. And if you had to have a nitpick about the Bills game against the 49ers, run defense again. And what's concerning, and I've watched probably the first quarter and a half, is they're not missing tackles on these big runs. They're just not getting off blocks, and that starts up front. And as a defensive tackle, you got to beat a block, or you got to make sure your guy doesn't get out to the linebackers. And the 49ers rushed for 151 yards. Obviously a little misleading because of the game situation. But if I'm the Rams, I'm going to say I'm going to run Kyren Williams until they stop him. Then I'm going to use play action to go to Nacua and maybe a lesser extent to Cooper Kupp. So I think this is a dangerous quarterback with Matt Stafford. They are still playing for something. They're in the thick of the NFC West race. So I think it's going to be an interesting game for the Bills. I think there's going to be a ton of Bills fans in the stadium like there was last year for that Charger game. So I do think anytime you go cross country is a difficult matchup.
It reminds me a little bit of that Chargers game, which was also in December, in the sense that, you know, it feels like the Bills should be favored in the game. It feels like it should be a win, but you can't guarantee it, especially when you have a trip of that length. Now, we should point out, the Bills handled a very similar situation and a very similar game earlier this year against Seattle, right? I look at the Rams and Seattle as being very close, and their records would reflect that, and the Bills handled that wonderfully. So that's what you're looking for, I think, in this game against the Rams. Looking at the AFC standings real briefly, Ryan, obviously Kansas City finds another way. The amount of ways that they've won games, I'm sure, is leaving Bills fans just beside themselves, those who watched that game on Black Friday. But, you know, you mentioned in your column, I believe, I know you mentioned it somewhere, that you think if the Bills go 4-1 down the stretch that the one seed is in play. Is that more based on what you've seen from the Chiefs in terms of thinking that they're, you know, they've got the potential to drop a couple of games here?
I do. The Chiefs' schedule is a lot tougher than the Bills. They have they got the Chargers at home Sunday night. They have Pittsburgh on Pittsburgh
Christmas.
And then Pittsburgh. They have Houston. And here's the thing: they go to Denver in Week 18. The Broncos are going to be playing probably for that 7 seed. Mm-hmm. They're going to need to win. So I think the schedule benefits the Bills. We've talked about who they have left after these two road games. It just slipped my mind. I looked at the standings last night. They're only a game ahead of Pittsburgh for the 3 seed.
Yeah.
So the Bills still have, obviously the 1 is in their sights, but they're also aware that, hey, that number 2 seed is important too, because that's 2 home games if you're fortunate to win in the first round. And Pittsburgh has a tougher schedule than the Bills. They got to go to Baltimore. They have to play the Texans. I think they got to play the Chiefs. So I think the AFC right now is 3 teams and then everybody else. Just judging by the standings, that would be the Chiefs, Bills, and Steelers.
Yeah. Well, the journey to that potential number 1 seed will continue on Sunday at SoFi Stadium, as we mentioned, against the Los Angeles Rams. Ryan and I will be back following that game on Monday with the next edition of the Further Review podcast, which can be found at buffalonews.com. So until then, I'm Jay Skirsky. He's Ryan O'Halloran. Thanks so much for watching.
Consumers Beverages, Buffalo's beer store since 1948. Find out what our latest deals are by visiting consumersbeverages.com.